Hello and welcome to another episode of the How to Scale a Business podcast. My name is Hector Santisteban and I'm your host for today. Our special guest is Mr. Kevin Lawson. He is the big guy solving big sales problems. And that's great because that's not me. Those of you guys who have met me in person, no one has ever called me the big guy. That's for sure. So Kevin, great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Hector, thanks for having me. And you know, I do stand about 6.5 feet tall, but the question that always gets asked is, did you play basketball? And people are always shocked when I say, not very well. I played soccer and rugby. It was the foot sports that got me.
We should have switched. I was playing in leagues that weren't meant for my kind, but that's how I found business. And thankfully, Kevin, give us the background. You know, sales, those of the listeners who have listened to a number of episodes of this show know that I got my background in sales, and thankfully, because it's so foundational to running and growing a business, and so much of scaling, at least in the beginning, or at least getting to the point where you can start to think about scaling, is the founders having to go out there and sell. But for you, how did you get into that world? How did that become a part of your mission and your brand became? And then fill us in a little bit about what you do with your clients now.
Sure. Well, the mission part and how I got in is really easy. I had a front row seat as a child to a guy with his own business run out of our garage. My dad was an entrepreneur. He imported, sold in the U.S. into the manufacturing space. So really interesting story. Quick aside here about me that all your listeners may or may not have experience with. My very first CRM was this. Imagine a 3-ring binder. Remember the old fax facsimile paper that would come spitting out, heat transfer paper, and would kind of spool up at the bottom of the fax machine? Well, my first job as a preteen was cutting those faxes into subjects and segments and pasting them into a 3-ring binder. That was how I got my start in sales and sales operations. So take that as a foundational experience. Count yourself lucky if you never had to do anything like that, because that was painstaking work. But it taught me a few things. It taught me in the sales realm how being organized around having systems for relationship management, job and deal management, program management, all was very, very structured around how you served your customers and how when you served them, you were serving their end game, not their just PO. You're serving the problem they're solving. And so I roll that all forward to how do I serve customers now? And I get to talk about real fun stuff like helping people grow their sales organizations so they can hire people into them. So many of the crazy in people's work and sales lives comes from a lack of structure, organization, or metricing them appropriately. Now, how many times do we get measured SDR roles, measuring number of dials? It's the wrong measure. How many times we just measure revenue or quota performance at the end of the month and not measure how we achieve that quota or how we're building towards the next quota? There's so much that we can do on the front side to help small, medium, and large businesses grow up and achieve more with the same amount of resources. It's my joy and fun that I get to take businesses along that journey and help them do more with the same resources and get more fun, more money, better relationships at home and at work out of just having a system. You know, we probably all read the HBR study around, you know, how you sell more. One of the adjacent statistics is just by having a sales process, you will sell like 17% more just by having a disciplined process. And I don't think anybody listening here would not like to have a 17% increase unless you're just on a rocket ship currently.
Well, I think maybe one thing that is important to speak to is that it seemed like sales went through a big shift. I remember my mom just thinking that like salespeople were the devil. And so I remember coming home from high school, you know, my very first interview and saying, I'm gonna get a sales job. And she was like, anything but that. You're not gonna do that. And perhaps they earned that reputation, rightfully so, perhaps. I think there was a big shift that happened with the internet. People all of a sudden had access to information. But I guess my question here, if there is one, is that if someone comes up thinking that salespeople are slimy or that sales is not for them or that sales is for a certain type of person, I mean, how do you kind of help someone approach or navigate that sort of perspective, if you will?
Sure. So I love to work with people that are non-traditional salespeople, largely because when I work with small businesses, somebody was really good at their craft, their thing, their why. They were really good at marketing or finance or wealth management or web design. They were good at their thing that was decidedly not sales. And I help them realize one of the joys I find in doing this coaching and sales leadership job is that I get to help them get all that preconceived notion of what salespeople are and how kind of slimy and icky they might view a salesperson. I get all that out of their head and I say, let's help our customers have a better experience with our product. Let's help our customers have a better business journey because we help them on the way. At some point in all of our lives, we've had to make friends. We've had to figure out how to connect with somebody on a personal level, decide if we could or could not help them, like them, want to be around, spend more time with them. You know, when I got married over 20 years ago, the moments early in that dating where I had to decide if my wife was going to allow me to hang around longer, you had to be that person that you wanted to be because of them. Sales is not too much different. We're helping people, we're helping ourselves enrich our lives. When we're prospecting and qualifying people, all those salesy type words, we're really just deciding if they have a need we can serve, we think we can help solve their problem, and are they the kind of person we want to work with? When you're in a B2B sales role, that kind of approach doesn't sound like sales. It sounds like collecting and serving friends and being served by a friendly type relationship. So you push all that together and you say, well, that's what sales can sound like. Let's go make some friends.
Yeah, I think it's a misconception that people have about sales that they're trying to take advantage or misguide or trick somebody into it. At least that was the perspective that I came into my first sales job with. And then I realized that the people who did the best were actually the ones who were most helpful, the ones who developed the best relationships, that there was this whole other side to it that it was actually, assuming that you're selling something that you believe in, it can actually be something that's very helpful and beneficial, should be beneficial for your customers and clients. So once we get past that, I think that that's a big part. The next part you've kind of touched on is the importance of these systems, because without it, you're not even throwing darts at like a dartboard. You're chucking a dart backwards in a, you know, while you're spinning around, because I think you probably can explain it better. What is the importance of systems? And is there times where you've seen people have a lack of systems and it really cost them? Or by contrast, by implementing some sort of systems, they saw some really big benefit from it?
Yeah, there's a ton of those examples. And for those of you who are thinking about scaling your business, think about whether you're in marketing, there's a system, digital, social, outreach, placement, product definition, you know, leaning into the hero's journey. If you're in supply chain, it's anticipation, stocking, delivery. There's systems around all these things, gap accounting. There's systems and controls around everything we do. So when we think about all of the things that salespeople do and having systems around that, think about stocking your own refrigerator. If you're going to bring home milk and eggs and cheese and you use a gallon a week and a package of cheese a week, you buy 2 weeks worth, you buy two of each, right? Assuming the expiration dates, you know, those other things. But when you know your craft, when you know how to serve your own needs, you know how to serve the needs of others. So selling is no different. Just having that system that we can say, by design, I need to both deliver on my promises or products and think about creating new relationships with new people. Just as a outjut of that, I can say, well, I need to go meet new people. That kind of systems thinking is what makes salespeople successful. Now, I've obviously been talking about the relational side. There's definitely the needs assessment and the qualification and the budget matching, all the sterilized components of selling. But at the base core level, you need a message and a method. And the message is not the stuff or the features I want to sell. It's the problem I want to help my prospect or client solve for. I don't want to ask them the question, anyway, what keeps you up at night? Instead, I want to say, you know, I've done some research about you. My system is to first get to know you and then figure out if I can serve you, see if I can help you, see if I can help you solve your problem. And that's the kind of solution I'm talking about.
Yeah, it really comes from a place of, like you said, consistency. And I think that when you are doing something over and over again, you can start to anticipate the needs of your clients, and then you can start to build these things into your process. So that way that there is something the prospect or the potential client feels like they're being led through the process, that you know what you're doing, as opposed to just showing up and just winging it from there. And I think whether it's at a conscious or subconscious level, the prospect can sense that.
Yeah. I probably want to edit your statement just a little bit. And it's really about word choice. It's nothing, you know, earth shattering here. You said our sales system. I want to encourage anybody out there who's trying to scale, think about how your buyer buys instead of how we want to sell stuff. The showing up with more than just a hunch or more than just a wing it kind of approach is really important. Showing up and knowing what kind of problems you solve and the questions that draw out how you solve them in the client's or prospect's terms. So when I'm working with any small business, I say, and this is a free giveaway. Anybody listening right now, grab a piece of paper and make three columns on it. Write your prospect's name in column one. And in column number two, write the problem you think they are trying to solve in their business. And in the third column, write how you think they measure value in solving that problem. This is kind of going back to the razors and razor blades or the drills and drill bits and the holes kind of discussion where people don't sell drill bits. That's the physical thing that transfers ownership, but they're selling either the hole that they're drilling or the hole that holds and houses what goes through that hole. Be thinking about the buyer's journey. What happened five steps before they reached out to you and five steps after that generated the need for you to have a discussion at all?
Today's episode is brought to you by Amplify Media. This is Hector's company, the company of the host of this show right here, right now. And what you have to understand about Hector himself is the level of care he brings to his entire team and to every single client. If you're just getting started with a podcast or you have an established one and you hate the nitty-gritty, the little details, the editing, the posting, the sharing, the reviews, all the things you have to do as a podcaster that make you crazy and waste your time, Hector's there to save you. And he does it for a price I think is ridiculously too low. I've told him multiple times he needs to raise the price because there's way more value there. Amplify Media, AMPLAFY media.com, can give you all the details on how you can get started or how you can streamline your process to just go back to creating the content that you love, that your followers listen to you for, and really build your voice. AmplifyMedia.com.
I don't know if it's stumbled upon, and it may just be a duplication of things, but in our business, we talk about demographics, you talk about psychographics, and the third stage that we've kind of identified is what is the stage of life or what are the events that they're going through that you said bring them to this place of wanting to come to the table? What is occurring? And if we could just go straight there, we can skip to the front of the line, essentially. Because we don't have to worry about whether or not they're ready or whether or not they're in the right place. We've really narrowed in all of those things, including the timing of it.
Absolutely. So that's a great lead in. Why don't you tell your story? How do you get people to raise their hand to want to talk about those kinds of things? Where are they in that life cycle journey that caused them to raise their hand and say, Hector, let's talk?
Yeah. Like you said, it's anticipating their needs and what are they challenged with? If you can speak to their challenge and then you can say that you have a solution, that you've done it before, oftentimes anticipating those things has been what's gotten people to really raise their hand. If you can say, with us, it's usually time and or money. Most of the time it's time, especially with podcasts and such. Running a podcast, it could be a full-time job, essentially. That's what we know is that we go in knowing that they're probably spending 4, 5, 6, sometimes 10 to 12 X the amount of time that they could be. And most of our clients are business owners. And so if that time is allocated towards other revenue driving activities, then they can get a return just by outsourcing or delegating some of the production. So we know that that's kind of the things that we speak to. Sometimes it's cost, sometimes it's quality, but usually it's time. There's usually a hot button I've found that people are struggling with. Or early on in my sales journey, we sold house products. And so we would have them bring out their current tools because we knew that they were already frustrated with their current tools. And it would bring up the fact that we've anticipated and knew their problems. So that's what we found has worked best for us.
Yeah. Getting people to identify that they have a problem that can be solved. It's probably the number one reason why I never use an ROI calculator, because anyone on the buyer side of the table is going to argue with my numbers, but they will never argue with their own. If you can help somebody realize in the terms that they measure value, that's that value piece, hey, not solving this costs me dollars, disallows me from earning additional dollars, makes me lose talent to other businesses, costs me reputational capital. All of those cost pieces are how they're measuring value. And they will never say in one breath, I'm losing dollars here. And then in the next breath say, I'm not really losing those dollars. I'm not losing that many dollars because they just said they're losing X number of dollars. It's a way to help people identify and own their own rationale and goal. And whether they're buying emotionally or rationally, they own their own data and they'll never argue with us.
Yeah. I think we've done a good job setting the table here, where most people are saying either they've realized that they need some sort of sales system, or they already realized that before they started here. That's why they're listening to it. And they're like, Hector, why did it take you so long to actually get to this place? But if someone wants to begin implementing this, start, you know, making this something, and let's assume that, you know, that they're not a sales-driven organization, or the founder doesn't have a sales background, what are the key elements or the key pillars? Can you give them like a high-level lay of the land of some things that they're going to want to put in place, or maybe even an order of operations, if you will, if there is that?
Sure. And to give you some kudos here, there's a reason we spend time by getting and building the case around why I have a system. It's because the system is what business owners that are trying so hard to scale beyond themselves, this is the part we skip. We're both business owners, and we know what it takes to build the system and the pillars and stacking the wins or the layers of sorts. Without a system, it's built on shaky ground. Because if you don't have a system, you can't figure out what part of the system can be improved or what's blatantly not working. So the order of operations is, first, pull out your pen and paper, get your notebook, get your whatever digital tool you're using to record, and write your process from soup to nuts. Write it long form. Write every step along the way. Don't say so-and-so does this and skip to the next line. You have to write out every single part of your sales process. And you will, by nature of that, figure out what you're missing, what you're over-processing. Because if you're trying to speed up your sales process, when, again, trying to scale a business, everybody's about repetition, speed, and turnover. Turnover meaning run faster, not people. You really want to edit out as many non-revenue facing, non-customer facing steps as possible. You know, you can say it's over-processing it. It's over-analyzing things. For those of us in sales operations with a deep background in ops, we tend to over-analyze stuff, which means it's like paralysis by analysis. Or, hey, I've been looking at this for, you know, 6 days and I haven't made a decision yet. That's the outcome of overworking things. So for the person trying to scale, get really specific on the three core values that your market sees from you. Do the interviews with your customers. Do the product positioning. Get feedback from peers. What is it that you do better than everyone else? Write the process to sell those three things. You've already written the long form. Get real specific and tighten it up to where you can do that faster. That's the shortcut to scale, is do more of it faster that the market is demanding. Because if you're just adding all these feature ads, you're going to get wrapped around the axle, and every sale is going to feel like a custom sale.
If someone is feeling like, Kevin, I don't really have a process. People, they reach out to me, we kind of talk to them, and then sometimes they ask me, how do we get started? like I feel like that's, in a nutshell, what some people are doing. So is it worth it to start even there if that's how they feel? Or should they always build off of what's already there? Or is there ever a time where you're going to come in and kind of start something from scratch, essentially?
Well, yes to all of those. And it's going to be very dependent on the situation. For every business, you have a leads process, you have an active sales opportunity process, and you have a customer satisfaction process. So if you've got a ton of leads and you can't close them, you have a sales process problem, not a leads problem. If you are twiddling your thumbs, hoping the phones are going to ring, you have a leads generation problem. If you've got a, hey, they buy from me once, and they should buy from me next month and never show up again, you have a customer success problem. So if you think about your sales process from lead to coming back for more in three chunks, that'll help get you started. For somebody who doesn't have any process at all, say, how do my prospects or customers find me? When they find me, how do I talk to them? Do I tell them my features? Do I have to educate them? Do I have to help them understand what problem they really have? You know, it's the, hey, doctor, my elbow hurts. Well, it's because you have a ligament torn or you've broken a bone. They have to go through that process. What are they actually buying from you? Or if you've got a mid-stage, like you've told them about your process, you've educated them, you've done some sort of scoping and test close with a, here's my price, here's my project plan kind of discussion, and they've said, no, thank you, you may have a product market fit problem. So by just writing the logical big chunk steps, that will help you intensely. So Reader's Digest version of that really long answer was, divide your process into three main stages, phases: lead, active sales discussion, customer success. For the purposes of what we're talking about today, I'm going to really focus in on the active sales process. And so I'm going to say, you've got a qualification, a fit or scoping discussion, a proposal, and a close stage. So in that middle section, you got four major stages. And if you'll start there, you'll figure out if you've got enough volume in the leads, or if you've got enough implementation or product delivery on the backside to make lifelong customers. But start with that middle process.
Earlier in the conversation, you said, and it was an interesting word, sterilize parts of the sales process. I'd love for you to expand just a bit on what you mean by that. And then what I gathered by the way that you've said that is, are perhaps other parts to the process, or that there's some magic sauce, or those parts are, I don't know, maybe you can explain a little bit, but it seemed like there was something more to it, or that, I don't know how to say that. I just thought that was a very curious way that you articulated it.
Sure. So sterilized, come just think about a hospital for a minute. There are some things that are very science in a controlled environment, very straightforward. You need to go meet new people digitally or analog in a way that helps start relationships, right? You've got that inflection point. Then you've got the, I have to come to a point where there's a transaction agreed upon. That's your open and close to a sale. That's why they call it closing, not reopening and reconditioning. It's open the sales process, close the sales process. The sterilized really also has to do with, how do we talk about it? If you're a non-salesperson listening to this podcast, and maybe you're a software development, or you're marketing, or you're in a different discipline of business, you probably don't like the terms quota, prospect, network, those really salesy kinds of terms. But if I said, hey, let's make this more approachable and talk about meeting new people, helping them along their happiness journey, helping them realize more value in their life by working around us, that would be a more appropriate, less sterilized way of talking about building, opening, and closing relationships. That's the way I approach nearly everything in life, is just find somebody else's why and help them achieve more of it.
Mm. Yeah. When I heard it first, it seemed like it meant that they were duplicatable, replicatable. And that's kind of what also you were putting it as well. And when I hear those are the things that are probably most easily found out by the founder or whoever's closest to the process, to the customer, to whatever the sales journey, and then can eventually be farmed out or trained out once those answers and kind of systems have been developed. Is that also kind of how you see those things?
It is. And you're trying to find the magic behind this one phrase. If you as a founder don't have a repeatable sales process, meaning you can't sell the same thing over and over and over again, you don't have a repeatable sales process, which means you can't scale if you can't sell the same thing more than once. If somebody else has got to do that for you, it's really, really difficult to sell. So the salesperson advice there is have a method and a message, so a process and a message, and then have systems and controls. If you're a sales leader trying to scale a team from 2 to 3 or 3 to 5 or 30 to 50, doesn't really matter. Having the process and controls, knowing how you do it, and the control is how well you're doing it, measuring it. So those KPIs are the lagging pieces to the sales process development.
Yeah, this is great stuff here, Kevin. If people want to get more connected with you, go deeper in your world, what is the best place to do that?
Yeah, thank you, Hector. A couple of ways. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, Kevin Lawson, or at Lighthouse Sales Advisors. You can find me there on LinkedIn. You can find me on my podcast. It's called Two Tall Guys Talking Sales that I co-host with a guy named Sean O'Shaughnessy. He's a peer of mine in sales leadership. Of course, reach out to me on my website, lighthousesalesadvisors.com. There's a contact me or contact us form there. So those are the ways we get in touch with people who want to talk more about their sales challenges and how we help people in that B2B space grow.
Cool. We'll link all that up in the show notes as well. My last question here for you, Kevin, in your opinion, what's the secret to scaling a business?
The secret is your why. It's that simple. Know your why and everything else will fall into place. Even a bad sales process can be eclipsed when somebody's why is big enough. So find your why. Have fun out there. Life's too short. Go meet new people. Have fun.
Great advice here. I want to thank all of you listeners who stuck with us today. We appreciate that. And we would love and be forever grateful for a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. And if you know someone who needs to hear this, someone who's in the midst of scaling their business, hit that share button, send them a message, let them know that you were thinking about them. And as always, we appreciate you being here. We'll see you on the next one. Later, y'all.